Well, I'm excited to be here, and I want to tell you some of the lessons I have learned over the last 20-some years working inside some of the great brands of our time. See, what we often find, we often think is that, man, I wish I could become one of the legends. I wish I could be great, and it feels like magic. It feels like somebody lucked out, right? A genius came up with a brilliant product. Somebody was in the right place, right time, and well, I guess I just wasn't lucky like that. And what I have found is it was not magic, it was not luck, it was a set of systems. There's an engine that you can build, that you do this and it leads to that. And it just creates not a normal experience, but raving fans. And so what I want to do is talk about the brands that create raving fans. And by the way, I'm going to talk about brands that are B2C, B2B, like business to business, business to consumer, technology, manufacturing, construction, legal. I've done it all in all these spaces. So I'm going to get into it, but honestly, I'm not going to do all the talking. I mean, I know, Julio, sorry about this. You brought me in so that I would talk, but I'm going to make you guys talk. In fact, if I do my job right, maybe the best part of this next session will be a nugget you get out of one of these little discussions. So it'll be just a couple of minutes. I'm going to have you turn to the people next to you. So maybe groups of two or three at most, and just have brief little conversations. I'm probably going to interrupt you because I do have a few things I want to share. But let's at least get started and let's stir up some of the brands you love. Who are you a raving fan of? That might be a business. It might be a sports team. Maybe it's a ministry. Maybe it's some sort of musician or artist. But maybe there's somebody that you're not just like, no, they're fine. Like, no, I love these guys, right? I mean, I buy all the t-shirts. I tell everybody about them. Like, I am all in. Who's that for you and why? Take a couple. Oh, and if you don't know your neighbor, maybe introduce yourself, right? Take a couple minutes and talk. Well, I hate to interrupt, but let's get into this. How did they do it, right? Keep these brands in mind. As I think through, as I share the lessons I've learned, maybe you guys can share. In fact, I wonder if any of you mentioned some of these brands. If one of your brands was mentioned, put your hand up if you mentioned one of these on the screen. Okay, yeah, I've spent a lot of time inside these organizations learning, figuring this out, not just them, but let me point out a couple of fun things. First is you will see some of the big popular ones, right? Like Harley Davidson. Hey, pro tip. If they tattoo your logo on their body, they might be a raving fan. Okay, so something's going on there. You know, Chick-fil-A has its share of fans. Disney, I spent a lot of time studying Disney. It was a sacrifice, but somebody had to step up and take one for the team. Going to the Disney, the conglomerate, that's hit and miss. But their theme parks. I mean, there's nobody like Disney theme parks. But before I get into how, I just want to pause and highlight this middle row so that I don't lose maybe half the room here. See, probably about half of you are thinking, okay, that's cool if you sell milkshakes or theme parks, right, or motorcycles, but not us. We're business to business. We're technical, right? Our industry's kind of becoming commoditized. I mean, we can make money, but listen, you don't have raving fans in my category. It's chemicals, right? I mean, who gets excited? Let me tell you, like, listen, that's not even close to true. All over the country, all over the world, it is happening. And I see people who are raving fans in this space. I have seen them. I've worked with them. It's happening. The difference is they're just not globally famous. I mean, Apple's customer base is every human on the planet, right? Whether you're an African Maasai warrior or a Baton Rouge businessman, they want you to buy an iPhone. Okay, well, you know, Milestone Construction. These guys have crazy raving fans. They're a Texas-based construction company. They do commercial construction. If you don't do commercial construction in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you're not their customer. Why would you need to know about them? But if you do, oh, you know Milestone. They're what I would call locally famous. It's just like their people just need to know. Capstone Hospice. I mean, we have a whole healthcare division. I mean, healthcare, right? The price is regulated. The product's regulated. Who you can hire is regulated. I mean, it's a tough industry to get creative. And there are people like Capstone that have got crazy raving fans. And then Buc-ee's. Is there anybody who does not know Buc-ee's? Okay, just I thought we were in Buc-ee land, right? Like, listen, for 100 years, gas stations have been nasty. I mean, you just know it, right? It's a necessary evil. And then Buc-ee's. I mean, it's just like the game changer. They just opened their second one in the Atlanta area where I'm from. And I mean, I know families that will do day outings. Like, it's Saturday. Hey, kids, where do you want to go? Let's go to Buc-ee's, right? Like, for the fun of it. It's a gas station. Guys, if Buc-ee's can do this, you can do this, right? It is not for the rare few who sell cool consumer products. So enough hype. Let's get into the business and talk about how. Now, I'm not going to spend long on this. I just want to, again, check the box for a couple of you finance-minded folks. I'm not just talking about how you make people feel better. I'm talking about how you make more money. There's real margin and value. And I just sampled a few of the big studies. There's tons and tons and tons. Not all customers are equally valuable. Okay, hold on. I'm a Christian. I totally believe that we're all equally valuable in God's eyes. We should treat everybody with dignity and respect. But not everybody's a perfect fit for your company. Not everybody's life and needs are wired so that who you are is what they desperately need. How do you find more of that perfect fit? Because when you do, you produce more value to their life and they produce more value to your company. How do you create raving fans, not just satisfied customers? Now, there are three behaviors. I'm going to try to get as tactical as I can here today. I'm not here to hype you up. I'm not interested in getting you motivated. Honestly, I'm just kind of assuming you guys are the motivated ones. I mean, you come to events like this, right? You're already ready to elevate and go. So let's check that box. I'm going to assume you're already motivated. I want to talk about how. How do you do this? Well, the first is a raving fan's not just a customer who feels better. They're somebody who they do three things. They buy more often. They pay full price, and they tell others to buy from you. I mean, there's tremendous value in these behaviors. Now, let me give you just a little teaser on this, right? You got to shift your mindset. It's not to do the same thing. This is really important. This might be more important than all the other tactics. You don't get raving fans and get excellence. You don't become a great brand and elevate your leadership by trying harder. The answer, I'm not here to tell you. The answer is not squeeze tighter, care more. You already care. You're already working hard. I got that. You don't get there by grinding your health down and wearing yourself out, right? You get there by using a different strategy. You want a different outcome? Build a different engine. A couple of teasers from this, right? I'll get into the real tactics in a minute, but if you want them to buy more and more often, you need to maximize the post-transaction feeling. Design your experience to maximize post-transaction feeling. That is not how most of us have set up our business. I mean, let's just be honest. I do a lot of evaluations of businesses. Most people have their emotional peak at the point of sale. Right? We want to get them excited enough to give us their money, and then nothing to go wrong. It's not bad, but that's not going to create raving fans. If you want raving fans, you got to maximize the post-transaction feeling. They have to love you more when they're done than they did when they bought. Now, I'll show you how to do that in a minute. But again, different mindset. Pay full price. Now, I'm going to tell you what to do in just a second. But let me just tell you what not to do. Don't win them with discounts. That's not, if you do discounts, if you offer coupons, price breaks, volume breaks, it's not to say you can't create raving fans. You just make it harder. I mean, let me just do a little non-scientific test here, right? When you think about the raving fan brands you just talked about. How many of them were you excited about because they were the cheapest? Anybody? Maybe once in a blue moon I run across a brand that's brilliant and the low-cost player in their space. But very rarely. That's not to say you can charge anything you want if you do this. I mean, there's price is central to strategy. You've always got to be competitive. You always have to have more value than you cost. I mean, that welcome to business, right? Like, that's why people buy is they think it's worth it. But at the end of the game, if you're winning your customers by saying, we're going to get more customers and through discounts, then your loyalty is to the price, not to you and your quality. And any competitor can decide they want to offer a cheaper price and you lose them. It's not about price, guys. It's about quality. If you provide a valuable enough experience, they will pay more for you, even for the same commodity, literal, Buc-ee's. Does anybody check the price of gas at Buc-ee's before you pull in? Anybody? Now, if it was like 10 times everyone else, we might start paying attention. But they're on average about 2 cents higher. Now, I say on average because their competitors are always playing with the price, trying to beat Buc-ee's. You know, gas station price can change 3 times a day, but it's not about price, guys. I mean, iPhones. If anybody's bought their iPhone because it's the cheapest, then I have some oceanfront property in Arizona I'd like to talk to you about afterwards. Just meet me right back there, right? Like, it's not about price. It's about quality. And then, man, tell others to buy from you. This is the ultimate in business growth. Business to business, business to consumer doesn't. In fact, I would say this matters even more in B2B place, where it's a bigger purchase typically and a higher risk. Man, the trust of somebody saying, those guys, you got to work with them. It's the best. So how do you get people to talk about you? Well, again, little teaser now, mindset shift. You don't get this by proving how awesome you are. You get this by giving them a story to tell. People don't tell facts, they tell stories. So create a story-worthy moment. You want these outcomes, you don't just try harder, you design a different experience. So enough hype. This is the engine. After 20 years, 23 years now, I've been working on this stuff. I started writing this down 7 or 8 years ago and going through this process, testing different versions of it. I mean, this is the pattern. Now, this is the generic pattern. You're going to need to create your own version of this. These are actual client documents. That one on the bottom right is Chick-fil-A. I have permission to share this with you. Yes, I worked at Chick-fil-A, and it's privately owned. One family owns the whole deal. So I'm going to share some examples from them today. I'm allowed to share everything I'm saying to you. None of this stuff is secret, but most of it's not public because as a private company, they don't have to post this stuff. So this Chick-fil-A is the one on the pyramids. That's a construction company. It's a financial services group on the top. The details look very different. One's talking about taste of food. One talks about meeting spec. Financial group talks about accuracy, right? The details are different, but they all follow the same pattern. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the next 30 minutes or so, and I'm going to walk through the pieces. Okay, here's what this means. Give you an example and let you process. But you're going to have to translate. How does this fit you? It's going to be different than how it fits you. Same idea, slightly different tactics. Okay, so let's start. It begins with customer insight. Do you really know your customers? What I often find is we have a lot of customer data, not so much customer insight. We know facts about them, when they buy, what they buy, but we don't know why. We don't know what it is they come to us for. We don't know what else is going on in their life. We don't really have insight. We haven't drawn the lines, seen the patterns. We just have a bunch of dots. So I'm going to actually play a little game with you, illustrate this, have a little fun. I'm thinking of a famous man. It's somebody you all know, and I'm going to give you some facts about this famous man, and we'll see how many of you can guess this. So just kind of guess as we go. In fact, you can call out names if you want, and we'll see how many you can get it. Bonus points for whoever calls out first, right? So here we go, 4 facts. So, it didn't work at all. The graphic didn't work. So it's guess, surprise! So all right, let me back up. Use your imagination that nobody saw that, right? Like we can just cut that. So let me give you the 4 facts. I think this will still work. So it's a British man. He lives in a castle. He is 65 to 75, somewhere in that range, and he has 2 famous grown children. Guess who most people typically guess? It's not Ozzy. It's King Charles. And then I flash the picture of Ozzy. And I totally messed that animation up. That's on me, not these guys. King Charles and Ozzy look the same on the surface. And they couldn't be more different, right? I mean, do you know the difference between your Charlies and your Ozzies? I mean, these guys, if you just looked at their stats, they bought Castle Cleaner. I got a big, rich Castle Cleaner. He's got 2 kids. He's about the same age. Yeah, this will be fine. Man, these guys would want, if you want raving fans, you've got to show up differently. I mean, Charlie probably wants like Edward Witherington III's Castle Cleaning Service, right? You have to wear 3-piece suits. Ozzy probably wants the Vampire Cleaning Service, right? Everybody in black. We only come at midnight. I mean, do you know the difference between what they want? Now, let me get maybe less melodramatic, because this is the first practical recommendation, not just a fun game. The recommendation is this. Have customer personas or customer avatars or customer profiles. There's a lot of different names for them based on which author's writing their book, right? But do you have an archetype of somebody that you would say, man, this is some of the classic people that come to us? And even small businesses will have two or three of these. They're not all your customers are not all the same. But man, the slight difference makes a big impact. Quick example, at Chick-fil-A, we talk about the difference between soccer mom Sarah and business owner Beth. Now, they both are the same age. They both come in every Monday to get their lunch. Soccer mom Sarah's got two kids, one in a stroller. She's coming to meet with other moms. She wants the kids to play in that semi-soundproof playground area. Thank God for the semi-soundproof, right? And the kids go nuts, and mom gets to catch her breath. Well, business owner Beth, she's not there for social hour. Quite the opposite. She wants some time alone to catch her breath and think. Now, we do little things like come to soccer mom Sarah and put this little plastic mat in front of her. If you guys ever had this experience, let's tape it on the table. I've got four kids. Those things, the kids can make a mess and you clean it up in one pick. It's beautiful. Business owner Beth does not want you to come put a cartoon mat in front of her during lunch. Small difference. Do you know who you're serving? Do you know why? I'll give you another quick example. Financial advisor, right? You're working with people on retirement. You have two women that come. These women are both professors at the university. They make the same amount of money. They're the same age. They both have 2.2 kids, right? Like, they're the same person. And yet one of them's a finance professor and one of them is a creative arts professor. One of them says, I want someone to go line by line and geek out with me and pat me on the back and say, you're good at this. And the other one's like, listen, don't bother me with numbers. Just tell me I'll be fine when I retire. Do you know the difference between your Charlies and your Aussies? Now, I'm about to get into tactics and tools and how you do this. But guys, if we don't get this right, you will waste a lot of time and energy. This pre-work makes a huge difference to how you run your business. Do you know you can run an engine, like an actual combustion engine, on raw oil? Okay, real life, it can be done. Now, it's a mess. Waste byproduct, the engine needs to be cleaned often, but it will turn over and combust. Or you could take the raw oil and you could refine it into high-octane petroleum, and you can get a lot more bang for your buck. How many of us are running our business on raw data? What if you refined that to insight? So let's have a quick discussion on this. Just turn to your partner, and I want you to share best practices with each other. How do you do this? What do you collect from your customers? What do you ask about? How do you do it? Is it surveys and salespeople or online or in person while you're working with them? How often do you do it? How often do you review it? I used to collect a lot, put it in a drawer, and do nothing with it. And then who actually does anything with this? Take a couple minutes and process. What's your customer insight system? All right, I hate to interrupt, but I'm going to move into the next section. So take some mental notes, take some physical notes. What's a good idea you got, right? Well, what do we do with all that insight? We're going to put it through this three-gear process, and it will save you so much time. By the way, as I get into this section, there might be a couple spots where you think, I'm not really sure which one I should do, or what does that look like for me? I just make something up and see if it works. Nope. No, that's just a signal. You got to go back upstream, do a little customer insight work, and then be like, oh, our customers do care. No, they don't care about that one. So it saves you a lot of waste, right? Okay. The first and most critical thing you can do to create raving fans, to build this amazing experience, is not what most people think I'm going to talk about, right? He's the customer experience branding guy. We're going to talk about like parties and graphics and, yeah, listen, it starts with operational excellence. If we don't get this right, nothing else matters. We say that operational excellence is first in sequence and in priority. See, when we want to think about this, when we think about excellence, I got to warn you, like part of the challenge is we as leaders, myself included, we think excellence and we think, how good can we be? How good's my team? How good's my technology? We think about our best day. When we do it all right, how do we show up? And that's not what your customer is thinking about. See, your customer is asking this question. Can I trust you? Can I trust you? Now, I'm I'm about to pick on McDonald's. Fair warning here. I like McDonald's. I grew up on it. It's kind of a special family treat, and there'll always be some nostalgia for McDonald's. But McDonald's is an easy target to pick on when I compare it to Chick-fil-A, especially when you think about operational excellence. I don't know. Maybe in Baton Rouge, we did not go to McDonald's last night. We were a step or two up above that. Maybe are the McDonald's here, are they all fast, fresh, everybody really friendly? It's like they nail operational excellence. Anybody? Yeah. Anywhere in the country, right? Ice cream machines. What's famous about their ice cream machines? Always broken, right? By the way, pro tip, you want something fun to do? Maybe I'm getting bored. You can pull your phone out and check this out. Go to www.mcbroken.com. One of their customers, who is a software developer, got so mad he made a real-time map of the U.S., and you can zoom in and zoom out and see all the broken ice cream machines. It's a whole clever deal. It's real. Check me out. McDonald's hates this. Of course, the branding's terrible, right? But here's their complaint. If you actually look at that app, I'd be curious if anyone could call it out and let me know. Last time I checked, I think they were 12% broken in the U.S. 13%. Okay, it's a bad day. Yeah. Here's the thing. 13% broken as of right now. You know what McDonald's would say to this? That means we're up 87% of the time. And we're famously broken. Guys, here's the hard truth when it comes to trust. Being inconsistently excellent will earn you the same amount of trust as being consistently bad. I'm going to say that again, because that's the big heart of this gear. Being inconsistently excellent earns the same trust as being consistently bad. It doesn't matter that sometimes you nail it if you're not reliable. Doesn't matter how fancy your stuff is. Doesn't matter how cool your team can be if they don't trust you. I mean, McDonald's, sometimes the fries are amazing. I mean, no offense, Chick-fil-A. McDonald's might have the best fries in the business when they're fresh. But the problem is not that I've never had good fries. It's that occasionally I show up and the fries have been there 45 minutes and they're cold and chewy and I don't trust them. They're not epically awful. They're just bad enough that we don't trust them. Now, again, this is the part where typically some of you getting excited. You're like writing your motivational speech. You're elbowing your team. We're going to do this. And you're thinking the hype talk. I got bad news. Deming, father of lean manufacturing and all this excellence in systems. And he says every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. So if you have an inconsistent part of your business, I got bad news. Your motivational hype talk's not going to work. I've tried this for a long time. You do not get operational excellence with hype. It just doesn't work, guys. Now, for a little while, if you're a good speaker, you'll get a bump. 2 months, maybe, tops. And then your people will get tired and go back to the system you built. You don't get here through hype. What's that old saying? Oh, the beatings will continue until morale improves, right? Doesn't work, guys. Now, but that's also the good news. Is you can just build a different engine. You don't have to be a speaker. You don't have to write great stories. I mean, sure, show them the McDonald's website. It's hilarious, right? But instead, let me give you some levers you can pull. I'm just going to blitz through these. There's all sorts of tools and tactics behind them, but I can't walk away without showing you a little bit of how. Here are four of the most common things that we find. You know, I should have said this at the beginning. If you want a copy of this deck, I'm going to throw my email up on the screen, and I will email anybody who wants it this deck, okay? So take all the notes you want, but don't worry about missing a detail here. Listen, the single most important thing you can do to improve your operational excellence is to hire with excellence. I can't tell you how many times we're brought in to upgrade a company, and the problems we're dealing with are sloppy hiring that's finally showing up in sloppy operations. It is 80% of the game in the operational category. Put more time and effort and thought into your hiring. And yes, it's hard. And yes, the hiring market is worse than it's ever been in trying to find quality candidates. Oh, that's true. That only means the people who do it well have that much more of a competitive advantage. Hire with excellence. Maybe you've done that. Maybe the problem is like, we all care and nobody owns it. Maybe the reason it's struggling is because that part of the company doesn't have anyone who leads it. So put a leader on it. Maybe it's a special assignment. You get a rising rock star and say, I got an opportunity for you. Maybe it's a whole full-time role. Depends on your organization. Harsh but vivid illustration of this is I've heard it said, hey, the best way to starve a dog is to assign 5 people to feed it. What, you did? I thought, oh, nobody fed the dog. Dang it. Right? I hate this one. This one's my least favorite. But number 3, sometimes the solution is you should do less. When you try to take on more than you have the team or tools to pull off, then they all suffer. And it's not because you don't have the right people, and it's not because everyone doesn't have an assignment. It's because we're all spread too thin. Sometimes for a season, you need to back out of a region, cut a product line, move into, like, just say, we are not going to attempt that for now. We're just going to focus on this. McDonald's. The irony and the tragedy of the McDonald's story is they used to be, how did they get to be Big Beast McDonald's? It's because they had brilliant operational excellence. You could count on them. By the way, do you know the size of their menu when they were known for operational excellence? It was 4 items. The burgers, the fries, drinks, and milkshakes. And now their menu's massive, and they're inconsistent. There's a correlation. That's a whole conversation. And then once in a while, if your customer insight tells you, maybe the answer is to over-resource it. Maybe, unlike everyone else in your space, you say, we will put more time, effort, or technology, maybe put a staff member. We will do stuff in this area. Everyone else has given up. We just can't be excellent. Oh, well. And we're going to figure it out because it'll make us stand out in our industry. Now, if you over-resource every area of your business, you'll go out of business. Don't do that. But maybe, just maybe. The best example I have of this is Buc-ee's and their bathrooms. For 100 years, gas station bathrooms are nasty, right? Well, how do you solve that problem? Well, Jimmy's working the register. Every 30 minutes, you send him to go clean the bathroom, right? Anybody know how they do this at Buc-ee's? Anybody paid attention? Because Buc-ee's bathrooms are flawless, right? That's part of why we stop there. Maybe 80% of why we stop there. The other 20% is their fudge and their pulled pork. Come on, let's be real, right? Okay, so do you know Jimmy doesn't check the bathroom every 30 minutes? Does anybody know? They have a full-time bathroom attendant at Buc-ee's. Now, we are not that messy people, right? Like, we're not making bathroom messes every 5 minutes. Most of Jimmy's job is inefficient and over-resourced. But the certainty that there's no mess that will go more than a minute before it's cleaned, that is worth it because that's what makes a bathroom stop at a gas station. Maybe what's that version for you, right? Okay, so let's just do the first question. For the first question, and the second question, I'm going to throw it up there as a challenge. Get data, don't guess. But I'd love you to turn and talk to your neighbor for 1 minute. What do you think are the critical few things? What's your core that you've got to get right? Not the fancy stuff, the fundamentals. We do this, and they trust us. We don't, and they don't. Take 1 minute and talk to your neighbor. All right, so my challenge to you is for each of those items, go get numbers. Don't hope you're figuring it out. Get specifics. All right, so operational excellence. It's the big beast. Get that right, and you create the opportunity for the next two. Now, these are designed deliberately, worked with the graphic designers on this to make these small gears. In fact, if I drew them to scale, they were so small at first time, it was like, okay, we can't read that, so we have to poof them up a little bit. But guys, little touches can make a huge difference if you have trust. Now, if you don't have trust, nothing matters. But if you do, they start asking the next question. Do you care about me? Do you see me as a person? Do I matter to you? And so what we want to provide is personalized service. In a moment, an experience that not just is about being friendly or polite. Honestly, that's kind of like the standard operational excellence stuff. Like, yeah, we treat everybody with dignity and respect. Sure you do. Good job. No, this is the moment we say, I see you. It's proactive. It's custom. It's personal. How do we make this kind of individual connection? Now, I want to show you a quick video. This is a video we designed back when I was on staff at Chick-fil-A. It has since been put out on YouTube. I'm allowed to share it with you. But this gives you the concept. Oh, and because it's on YouTube, it's a free resource. So go to YouTube. I'll tell you how to look it up after watch, and you can just show it to your team. But here's the idea about how we create a personal connection. We have a chance not just to sell a product or a service, but to impact lives. We have real people on the other end of this. So how do we show up and how do we do that? What does that look like tactically? Well, there's two basic levers you can pull, high touch and high tech. Now, let me just briefly give you some examples of each of these. High touch, elevated language, come up with fancier, nicer ways of talking. Yes, even in some of the more mundane businesses. I mean, fast food, before Chick-fil-A and a few other brands that have kind of elevated it, it was kind of the lowest end, right? And Chick-fil-A now, if they say thank you, they don't say, you say thank you, they don't say you're welcome. What do they say? My pleasure. You're all trained really well. If you need a job, I know a guy. So it just feels nice. Now listen, if your food's bad, I don't care if you say my pleasure, right? Remember? But if that's good, little touches make a nice difference. Surprise gifts, especially key on the surprise part. The Christmas basket. I mean, I love Christmas and I love baskets, but you're one, the business-to-business guys, you're one of 17 baskets on their counter. But the random summer basket, it's like giving flowers to my wife. I give it to her on her birthday, I'm not in trouble, right? I give it to her in the middle of May when there's nothing going on. I mean, we talk about that for weeks. The surprise gift makes a huge difference. Do something extra. Hey, you paid me for X, I'm going to do X plus this extra thing you didn't even know was coming. And then just send them a personal note. Guys, it will never get old getting a personal note from somebody. Handwritten, even a text, send them a quick video. Connect with them. And then high tech. It's not either or, it's both. The first one, use your CRM. I mean, how many of us have it and don't use it? It has a ton of really cool things if you would ever use it fully. And I confess, I have done this myself, like stand it up, get bored, move on. Oh yeah, I forgot to use that sucker. If you don't have one, check these out. There are free options. They're powerful. Business to business, folks, trying to give enough for you too. Google News Alerts. If you haven't used this, this is a superpower. It's free. You Google it, right? You can go put in any word or phrase you want. And so you maybe have a long-term client, an industry you follow, some sort of key people. And whenever it pops up in the news, you get a little note. So one of my clients was Nucor Steel, worked with them for a while. And So put them in Google News Alerts. This happened last year. They acquired a new plant. I saw that in the news. I copy the email address, I mean the web address of the article, pop open email, send it to my buddy Ron Fox and say, hey Ron, congrats on the new acquisition. Looks like a cool plant. Send. Took me 20 seconds. I see you. I care about you. It's not a sales email. There's time and place for that. This is the, I just want to know, I'm thinking of you. Google News Alerts is brilliant for that. And then AI. Listen, if you've not been paying attention, AI is changing the world. Now, the problem is most of us, they think we know what AI is. It's from the movies, right? Where it's robots that are going to kill us all and take over the world. Thankfully, we don't know how to make that kind of AI yet. But it's here in many, many other forms. In data analysis and pattern tracking and robotics. But boy, if you haven't noticed, it's upending communication. In fact, AI is doing crazy things in writing and speaking and talking. And so there are some really powerful tools that you can rent for like $50 a month. Subscribe to them and they'll do stuff for you. Let me play one quick video for you that outlines an example. This is an AI who's making a phone call to a hairdresser to set up an appointment, and the hairdresser doesn't even know it. See if you can catch it. In fact, notice that they designed the AI to have pauses so that it sounds like a human. It's just 1 minute long. Check this out.
How can I help you? Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client.
That's the AI.
I'm looking for something on May 3rd. Sure, give me one.
Live person.
Mm-hmm. Sure, what time are you looking for around?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, we have a 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Bye.
You may have been having phone calls with AI and didn't know it. You want to know the craziest part about that video? That video is 4.5 years old. In the world of technology, that is a generation ago. Listen, in the future, I'm just telling you when it comes to business, in the next 7-10 years tops, there's going to be two kinds of businesses. Those that are fully utilizing AI to provide great service and those that are out of business. This is true in literally every domain I've run across. So you don't need it today, but you are going to. So start checking out AI. All right, let me close up with the last chunk of the engine, memorable moments. You start with customer insight. You build operational excellence. You make a personal touch with personalized service, and they love you. But they don't tell anybody about you. Just because they love you doesn't mean they're talking about you. Remember, people don't tell facts. They tell stories. So we have to create moments that make this story worthy, like, oh, you got to hear about this. I mean, Julio was telling me one getting ready for this, talking about Chick-fil-A and he forgot his wallet and all this crazy stuff they did to make sure he had a great experience. It's a story. It doesn't matter how many good times everything went smooth. You got to have a story to tell. So how do we create story-worthy moments that pop? Well, first, let me tell you what you can't do, what the key you got not do, is you cannot make the story about yourself. This is the biggest mistake, and it makes sense. We think the story needs to be about how awesome I am. Okay, let me use Star Wars to illustrate this, okay? Partly that's because I think it makes sense. I think you'll get it. Okay, maybe partly because I'm a Star Wars nerd. I might have a Jedi robe and lightsaber in the closet. For the kids. It's for the kids, right? So I keep wanting to be Luke Skywalker, right? I'm the man. I'm going to be the Jedi that say, hang on, young Luke, not depressed, deadbeat dad Luke. Star Wars. Okay, so I'm cool Luke, right? I'm the Jedi. I'm Rey. I'm going to save the day. And they might even believe that. The story I tell and the moments, look how awesome I am. And if I'm the hero of the story, this isn't going anywhere. They might even believe you're a Jedi. They just don't want to talk about it. They don't want to tell your story. They want to tell their story. So your customer needs to be the hero of these story-worthy moments. And now, who are we? If we want to have some value out of this story, right, we got to be in it. So if we don't get to be Luke, who do we get to be? We're Yoda. We're the wise mentor, right? We're the guide that helps them realize you really are awesome. You really are a Jedi. We make them feel like they're awesome. See, the question your customers are asking is, how do I feel about myself when I'm with you? Now, this is subconscious. Most of us are not explicitly asking this question, but we are all asking this question all the time. The places you hang out, the people you're closest with, the brands, the raving fan brands you said you loved at the beginning, they reveal who you want to be. The things you're like, I love that about myself, right? And so we get into this. It can be about you as a person. It can be you as a company. There's a lot of ways to do this, right? Business to business has its own version. Give you a couple of quick examples from brands. Harley. How do you think folks feel on their Harley about themselves when they're off on a wild, especially their raving fans? And we have any hog riders? Anybody got a Harley? Okay, we got a few. All right. I don't know if this is true of you, but here's what the research would say. You feel a little bit wild and dangerous. Like, I'm free, baby, and the rest of y'all might be domesticated, but I still got it, man. I'm still a bad mamba jamba, right? I see you. We got the bald look. Heck yeah, we're wild, man. We got bald heads because that's what it means to be wild, right? Now, before you think, okay, raving fans are about wild men. Volvo has raved. Do we have any Volvo fans in the house? Anybody raving fan of Volvo? Okay, what's Volvo famous for? Safety, right? How do you think their raving fans feel when they're driving a Volvo? They feel safe. And by the way, the research would say a little bit smug, right? Like, what's wrong with the rest of you morons? Why aren't you in the safest car on the road? So what is it? Is it safe? Is it dangerous? Customer insight. What do your customers want to feel like? What is your ideal customer? What kind of Jedi do they want to be? And brand by brand, Chick-fil-A is all about family, similar with Disney, right? John Deere is all about excellence and dependability. I mean, each of them has a totally different feeling they're trying to create in their lingo and their style and their effect. And so the question is, what's your version? Here, Chick-fil-A, let me give you an example. This is brilliant advertising, right? It's in the National Advertising Hall of Fame. This is not what I'm talking about. If you stumble across one of these campaigns, do it. But you know, Chick-fil-A spends 5% of what McDonald's spends, and they're, by the way, about the same size in revenue, almost exactly the same right now. And Chick-fil-A spends 5% of McDonald's spend here in the domestic U.S. It's not on marketing and advertising. 95% of their marketing effort goes into local events like a daddy-daughter date night. Has anybody done this with their daughter? Okay, so I have. I have three girls. They're amazing. And you just go to your local event. It's not on the news. It's coming up. It's usually right around Valentine's Day, so check your local Facebook page or the bulletin board. You sign up for a slot. They often have a horse-drawn carriage. You just take a lap around the building. It's pretty easy, right? They have live music. They create questions for daughters to ask dads. It's because McDonald's, for its $1 billion of advertising, can't compete with the power of this moment. How can you create a moment like this? Now, some of you are like, I don't know if we're going to have romantic dinners over chemical development, right? Like, how's this going to work? So maybe some of you are big projects. You're in construction or you launch events and you do things. Maybe you need to have a post-event moment where you throw down and have a big party. You literally roll out a red carpet and make a big deal. Maybe you need to take a page. Some of you are like, we have thousands of customers. I can't show up at a party every time we do it. Well, maybe you can take a page out of Apple's playbook. Do you know they have patented their boxes? I mean, what's there to patent? It's a box, right? A dozen little things. They're creating a box opening experience. Let me do a non-scientific test. Let's just see if this is working. How many of you have an Apple product box you've still not thrown away? It's still sitting around. Look around the room. Okay, hold on. Do you keep all your Amazon boxes, anybody? Okay, because that's called hoarding. That's a different problem, sir. For the rest of us, what is it about the box? It's a box. There's something about the moment that makes it powerful. Do you know what you're doing? Do you know what kind of feeling you're trying to create and what tools you're going to create it with? Guys, this is the engine. Build insight. Get to know who they are. Build trust. Create a moment where they say, I see you. Yeah, as a real person, I'm reaching out to you. I'm using your name. I'm doing a special touch, maybe with tools, maybe with a personal note. And then create maybe once or twice a year, do a fun little story moment. Small gear, little bit of effort makes a huge difference. And when you do this, the normal output of your business is a raving fan. It's not magic. It's not luck. It's just, this is how it works. In fact, I would challenge you to think about the raving fans brands that you went through and to say, okay, how many of them do all these things? My guess is all of them do all of them. In fact, in 20-some years of doing this, I have not found a company who doesn't do all these things and doesn't get raving fans or vice versa. It's a perfect correlation. It's not guess, it's a system, and you can build it. So let me give you the single last lesson I learned, maybe the single greatest lesson I learned working with all these great brands. And it's especially appropriate given where we're meeting here today. Is that you don't have to choose between being noble or profitable. See, sometimes we work with healthcare, right? You see in the back, right? You see this monitor station, IV bags. It feels like your work is a grind. And you're like, discipline and excellence and systems. And that Scott Wozniak guy got me to tighten up. And now we're going to make more money. And like, but I wanted to be noble. I wanted to change the world. And now I'm just being efficient. Hang on. All those systems impact individuals. See, that's my nephew. I was just with him last weekend. That was Logan about 4 years ago. He was 7. And Logan had cancer. Came out of nowhere. Blood cancer. Still don't know what happened. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And man, St. Jude stepped up and made a huge difference in his life. I've seen their commercials. But now I'm a raving fan. Not before. Now that I've experienced it. Because not only was it like, man, the excellence, operational excellence. They had personal service. By the way, I've not worked for St. Jude's. I can't take any credit for this. I just like saw it and was like, that's what I'm talking about. And they even, his name is Logan James. He happens to be named after the Wolverine character in the Marvel Universe. If any of you are fans, you know, right? And so the nurses found out, those are the male nurses, and they even created a memorable moment. They call it something different. And they said, man, we're on your team fighting. Guys, this is the lesson I learned. If you look far down the road, the most noble path happens to be the most profitable path. I mean, you could do all this. I started with how much money this makes, right? Well, this is also the best way I know to change the world. Show up with excellence. Give them something they can count on. Make them feel seen and heard. Give them a chance to feel like a Jedi, the kind of person they always wanted. Is that something I do to make more money, or is that something I do because I want to make the world better? Yes. Listen, if you just want satisfied customers, you can make money. But if you do this, if you build a raving fans engine, a customer experience engine, you will be able to make money and meaning at the same time. So don't settle for satisfied customers. Go to the next level, build an engine, create raving fans. Thanks, I'm done.
Let's hear it up for Scott. Let's hear it up. Thank you, Scott. It's great, man. Appreciate you.
Oh, if you want that deck, that's my email. While we're doing this Q&A, seriously, send me an email and just say deck, right? Like, I'll send you the deck. Now, if you want to learn more about our company and what we do to help businesses build this, from assessments to online programs to actually like tactically building this stuff, just say something in the email like, I want to talk further, or I want to learn more about how you can help, and my team and I will get you a bunch of info. But seriously, feel free to just say deck, and we'll get you all this tool. So thanks,
man. Hey, I want to open it up for a little Q&A. We've got a couple of mics. Any questions from anybody? And I did get a text. So can we get a mic up here? Does anybody have a mic here? Because we're going to go to Jean McNeil first, because I know she had a question. Right here. Can you come up here? Jean, can you raise your hand? They're looking for you. Here we go.
I think you just got voluntold.
Well, what ended up happening is she texted me the question, and I'm going, hey, you know.
There it is. There it is.
Okay, so if a business has hundreds of offices or locations and uses a scorecard to evaluate customer service, what's the best way to use those results to improve? Outsource the company or team to create consistent customer service, or what would you advise?
Okay, so we've got multiple locations. We got a survey going on. How do we actually use that data? Is that what the question is? Yes, okay. There's a lot we could get into, the survey design and the right questions and all this cool stuff. Net Promoter Score is one of the more classic questions. If you don't know that, how likely are you to recommend? That's one of the more reliable. But that's an after-the-fact question. So what it doesn't do is diagnose why. So you sometimes have to pair kind of the lagging measure, we like you, to like, well, did this happen, this happen, and this happen? Remember I asked, what are the critical few things you have to get right? I would ask for those and say, hey, did we do this well? So for example, at Chick-fil-A, we ask, how was the food? That's one of the fundamentals. Did somebody treat you friendly, right? I mean, basic questions. Hey, by the way, if you didn't know this, every now and then at Chick-fil-A, random algorithm prints out a super long receipt, and it has a little code, and you can take an online survey and get a free. Has anyone ever done that? You get a free sandwich for that? If not, you might have been throwing away a lot of free sandwiches at Chick-fil-A. That might be the best part of today's talk. But that's how they do it. They just randomly collect surveys. So there's a way to set up automatic systems and algorithms, and they're not that expensive. But honestly, folks, some of you should just go to surveymonkey.com. It's free. Send them 7 questions. Now, the one key I would say to this is don't send them 27 questions. The longer your survey is, the less likely they're going to answer it. So my goal is to send a few questions. And if you have a lot, then I would send a series of small surveys. So that's the survey side. The flip side is, what do we do with it? We'll talk about it. Now, we can get into the nuances, and I don't really have time to unpack all that. We could talk more offline if you want. But don't overcomplicate this, guys. Just put the results in front of your team and have a conversation about it on a regular basis. At least quarterly, I would recommend you say, hey, let's look at what our customers are saying about us. That assumes you're asking at least quarterly. But, man, if you just start once a year, start with that. It's not, you know, more frequent is better. Weekly is probably too much. But get data, talk about it. Then go change it. Say, hey, we want to improve this part of the business. Add a question. Talk about it. Like, start there. And if you want to get nuanced and fancy, but 90% of the value is just ask them some basic questions, 7 at most, 4 or 5 is better, and then just have a regular meeting and talk about it.
Thanks, Scott. Any other questions? Anybody else want to ask a direct question? We have one right here. If you can keep your hands up.
There goes the mic right there.
Mic's coming right there.
He likes me to ask questions, Julio, you see. I wanted to ask you, if you meet your customer that is about to lose his business, and you dare to deliver that message, how do you build trust?
Yeah, that's a tough scenario. Thanks for an easy question. Appreciate that. So first, what you don't do is dodge and hide and pretend. You asked it right, trust. So trust is assumes some authenticity and some honesty. I think it's two things. It's what you say and it's how you say it. So the how you say is we come alongside you and say, man, together, side by side, let's talk about how we can work on this. Is there anything I can do to help? What can we do? And then what you say is you don't just say what the problem is. If at all possible, you want to try to offer some helpful solutions, opportunities, ideas. And now, if you don't have any, that's where it gets tough. And maybe we could talk about that. But usually, if it's your customer, so the way you talk about this, I'm assuming it's a business-to-business scenario. You're working with this. Especially the bigger businesses. I'm not sure exactly the industry or nuance you're in, but I'll put it this way. A lot of the larger companies we work with, from retail or fast food to manufacturing or chemicals, they actually have an entire team and department whose job and time is spent on making their suppliers and vendors, the rest of the ecosystem, healthy. I mean, Chick-fil-A, I would take learnings and develop all these strategies for the company. And then every now and then they'd be like, we want you to go to some of our partners and teach them this stuff. And we would host days for partners to come learn excellent stuff together and swap best practices. And so this whole partnership idea to say, Toyota is a brilliant example of this, by the way. The multiple layers of ecosystems. If you're in a vertical chain, like, you know, you're one player in this long chain, like they make this and this and I do this, and which part of the chain has to work for you to be successful? All of it. Oh, by the way, which one is your customer, right? Is it the guy directly you sell to, the one above, the end user? All of them. I mean, I wish there was an easier answer, but so this is probably not a one-off. This is the way I would design it is we work with all the partners and say, hey, we're going to have shared goals. We're going to learn together. I'm going to bring everything, especially if you're the bigger player, often you can send team and resources to say, let's at least teach you and consult to you and advise to you. So it's a whole pile of work to help them figure it out. But it's the how. Like, we're partners. We're all trying to serve the same end user and make a lot of money on the way. Let's do this together. And so invite them in. Let them challenge you. You show challenge them. If you don't have any of that relationship set up, and then you show up and say, hey, you're in trouble. Well, that's tough. But I would say to all of you guys, don't assume. The world is in a volatile time. Don't assume your partners are doing great. Don't assume that you know what's going on or that they know their stuff just because they deliver quality. Build a relationship. Take them out to dinner. Invite them to a tour of your space, tour their space. Put real time and effort into them because your success and theirs is shared. So the insight behind the question is really, really strong. You can't just be like, too bad. I guess my customers are struggling. What a rough year. Like, it's a big deal. So if you're facing one of your industries, you're in a zone that's starting to face recessions and headwinds and all that, you might need to ramp up your partner support this year.
We got time for one more question right here. Oh, we have a question. Oh.
Yeah, we already got one? Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm going to imagine it's a brilliant question, but I can't hear it.
I don't hear it. You're on.
Equipment adjustment.
Okay, here we go. So if you find yourself in the situation where you've lost trust or your customer has lost trust, what are the steps to regain it? And can you give an example of a company that has succeeded in that?
Yeah, great question. I've been there. Thankfully not currently, but there have been some past career moves. We were in companies that had great aspirations and really cool tools, and we biffed it, right? So the first thing is to acknowledge it. Name it, own it, eat some crow. It's no fun. This is the part most people want to skip, right? And the second thing is you start going through this checklist, and I gave you four. There's actually like eight or nine things that we could get into. And you say, where can we trim? Where can we cut? For example, maybe we need to pull back. Maybe we need to narrow this focus and get this right. Maybe we need to hire up. Maybe we need to change our model. You get some pretty dramatic adjustments to say, we got to build. And then you start earning it one step at a time, and you tell them what you're going to do. The best example I've got of this that's recent is Domino's Pizza. Does anybody remember, it's been a handful of years now, when Domino's came out and said, hey, we surveyed all of you guys, and we heard you. Our pizza tastes like cardboard. They just said it. And you're like, oh, snap, you're not supposed to say that. Like, I mean, everybody knows it, right? But you can't acknowledge that. And they're like, yeah. And so we totally redoing our menu. We're going to have better pizza. We're working on that. Now, it didn't mean we trusted them. Like, oh, they got it. But you know what it did? We started paying attention. Now, if the pizza was bad after that comment, it's all over. So they did a lot of hard work, and they really did totally. By the way, my son's favorite pizza right now is the Domino's pan pepperoni pizza. Like, so much so that he begs us, like, we're trying to order from somewhere else. He's like, can you just get a Domino's one? You guys can have whatever you want. I just want Domino's. Now, that would never have been said a while ago. So, maybe you don't like Domino's. Maybe this is your challenge to check out Domino's pan pizzas again. By the way, the doctors in the room, I apologize for that statement. That's terrible for you. But it tastes good at long last. So Domino's is maybe the most current example that I know that has... another good one, Harley Davidson. So if you don't know, Harley was like the jam. I mean, it was it. And then they kind of lost sight of operational excellence, and they lost trust. So there was a little season, 10 or so years here, where they weren't reliable. They weren't as quality as they used to be, and they were still priced like it. And so they kind of crashed in brand trust, except for some diehards. But they are on their way back, baby. If you've not been to a Harley dealer, even if you don't like motorcycles, check out a Harley dealer. Do you guys have one in town?
Yeah, we do.
The dealer experience and the quality they're providing is it's all the stuff.
I think we're all going over there right after this to go get him a Harley Davidson. Trying to be cool.
So, hey,
last question right here, John, real quickly.
Yeah.
Can you connect the dots between what you talked about in training and employee behavior?
Yeah, okay. So we in my company, we actually talk about two engines. If you want to be a legendary brand, you need to build two engines. One is what we talked about today, your customer engine, and the other is the employee experience engine. I mean, let's think about it. If you have an amazing people and you build an amazing customer experience, you become a legend in your category. I mean, that's the game. Now, I would say to a room full of leaders, your primary customer is probably your employee. Our job is to set them up to be awesome so they can serve our customer to be awesome. So we have it's a parallel engine. The details are different, but you got to have employee insight, right? You got to give them a fair deal. You got to create real community, and then you got to invite them into a bigger story. And so the details and how you do it are different, but I love the insight behind that question. That's a whole other parallel. In fact, the way we say they're parallel is like two strands of a DNA helix, right? Like they intertwine. You need your customers to serve your employees to serve your customers. And so, yes, do not ignore the power of serving your customers, creating an employee experience that then creates a customer experience. Non-optional. Those go together.